Ante Up is your poker magazine dedicated to the everyday player and their poker rooms. Pick up a free copy at your favorite poker room nationwide each month. But Ante Up is much more than a magazine. Visit anteupmagazine.com daily for breaking news and each week download our award-winning poker cast. Join us on our action-packed poker cruises to exotic destinations and find special deals on Ante Up gear and great poker products at anteupstore.com. Ante Up, it's your poker magazine.
From the WDAE Sports Animal Studios in Tampa, Florida, it's the Ante Up PokerCast. And now here are two guys who think they know how to play poker, Chris Cosenza and Scott Long.
It's September 14th, 2012. You're listening to the best PokerCast on the internet. I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Frustrated Long.
Uh-oh. You're always frustrated.
Yeah. Well, you know, here's the thing is, like, a couple months ago, I mean, we're so concerned about the quality of the show, right?
Yeah.
And obviously, when we switched to Skype, it was much more convenient for us, a lot easier for us, cost-effective for us, but obviously probably not quite the level of quality that we had at that awesome radio station, right?
Right.
Being able to gaze into each other's eyes, but you know, we tried to do our best with the show, right? And
yeah.
You know, every once in a while we have some audio difficulties, and you made the good point, you know, hey Scott, maybe it's your internet connection, right?
Yeah.
And I'm like, you know what, you might be right. So you know, I switched to a higher speed internet provider, total pure evil company. Never change anything with the show, right?
Right.
And totally messed everything up in my house, and it cost me $30 more a month. So I'm like, screw it. Going back to the other guys, and they give me a 36-hour work window.
36 hours?
36 hours. They showed up 27 hours into it, and this is the actual quote from the installer. Man, this stuff's all hosed up. I'm going to get in my truck and make some calls. I'll be back later. What? Who just leaves in the middle of a service call? But anyhow, I'm back on the old provider, so hopefully everything is clear now. But yeah, you know, customer service reps are on my new list of people I hate.
Your new list of list.
Right. Probably still below the Kardashians this year.
Well, you sound really good this week, so we don't want jinxing or anything, but we'll see if it stays this way.
Let's get into the real show now here. We're doing absolutely no self-promotion on this show.
Well, okay, good thing you brought that up. You know, a lot of our listeners who go way back to before Black Friday, I should say, and know me not just as Chris Cosenza, but also as Will Hopper. And a lot of people will always ask me what that means, and we talked about it on the show once or twice, I guess. Maybe it was during one of those Q&A things or one of those letters shows, mailbags. But
I was always disappointed that it wasn't a grasshopper. I always pictured, you know, your head on a grasshopper.
On Jiminy Cricket's body.
Exactly. Wouldn't that be awesome?
I'll have to do that in Photoshop.
It's going to make it easier for me to squash you when we argue.
I'll have to do that for Photoshop for you.
There we go.
But I explained to everyone that I had written a novel, or at the time a manuscript, and before Ante Up was Ante Up, and I had an agent, and they were representing me to try to sell this novel series I had written, and what ended up happening was my agent ended up going to representing strictly nonfiction, and then pulled my books off the publisher's desks and stuff, and then at that time I was kind of frustrated, and I said, you know what, screw it, and then some gray-haired guy walked up to me and said, hey, let's start a magazine. So I said, all right, I'll give up my dreams of publishing this novel and moving on. Recently, our very own Joe Navarro and I had been talking a little bit about the novel and how I had taken it and changed it a little bit to sort of inspired by Joe in reverse. You know how everyone knows now that Joe is, of course, an ex-FBI agent who is relied upon for his nonverbal communications, knowing what people are really thinking and saying with their nonverbal actions when he's interrogating them. And has now converted that into a wonderful poker career as far as helping people at the tables and writing books and everything, and, of course, writing for us. And so
what am I action showing right now?
Well, you're verbal, so I can't tell you. If it's nonverbal, I can tell you, but I can't see you right now. So
we'll do the video cast.
So what he said was, hey, you know, I think this is a great idea. And I said, okay, well, that's cool. Who's your agent? Maybe your agent will represent the book for me, or, you know, maybe you have some connections at your publishing house. Let them know what's going on. And he's like, you know what, Chris? When you wrote that book, the publishing industry was totally different. Now, it's not that way anymore. You know, you can go the conventional way and try to find an agent again and go through all that trouble and all that money of mailing out your manuscript. And he said, and then even if you do get a deal, you'll be lucky to get money up front, you know, in advance if you do get one. And if they do give you a percentage, it's like 6%. And I was like, oh, okay, well, thanks for making me feel good about this situation here. He's like, no, but wait a minute. He said, you really should have it published online, and you'll get much more of a percentage, 70, 60, 70, and 80% of whatever you sell. He said, and then the way things go these days is these publishing houses monitor sales and monitor products online. And then if they really like your book or your potential sales, they'll contact you, and then that conventional deal will come your way. So just to announce it real quick on the show, I have published the novel that stars William Hopper as the detective of the story, and the story is called Untraceable, and you can find it on Amazon, and then it's in the process of being found on Smashwords and the Apple Store and all the other stuff. And I'm selling it for the amazing low price of $2.99.
That's not a misprint. $2.99.
That's right. You know, I looked at some of the ebook. You have to try to find the sweet spot of a price and everything. And I start looking at the prices of books, and like, you know, the hottest books in the world right now are selling for $9.99. The most popular books in the world, and I'm like, okay, I can't charge $9.99 for the book, even though, you know, I spent years on this thing writing it and everything. But I wanted to, you know, I just wanted to put it out there. I wanted people to see it and like it and read it. And then if they like it, then maybe I'll publish my sequel and some other things. So anyway, if you were always curious about Will Hopper, why he was always called Will Hopper, and you wanted to read about it, or you had a friend who wanted to read about it, whatever, I'll put a link in the forum during the recap of this show. And then every
sure,
once in a while
because,
we'll bring it up.
You know, it's untraceable, so they're not going to be able to find it.
That's right. It's untraceable.
Way to get it right there. So.
But I hope you read it. Hope you guys get it, and I hope you like it. So, and there's poker in it too. Not a lot because you know, I'm trying to work that in gradually into the story, but it tells the story of how he became a detective, and there are some occasional poker references and things like that. But it's mostly a thriller. So
now, are you going to kill his wife off in the sequel?
I might, just because, you know, I did that in Rounder. So.
All right, once you get enough there that you can hire an agent, you need to be looking across the aisle here.
Okay.
Because here's the thing, terrible marketing right now. Terrible. Here's how you're supposed to do it, all right? I'm going to give you the first couple tips for free. The rest
awesome.
Of it cost you.
Thanks, buddy.
It's just $2.99. Just buy it if you want it. I don't care. It's there. No. What you need to do is the first 30 people to buy it, get it for the low, low price of $2.99. You got to build some urgency there. You need people to turn the show off right now and go download it because they're afraid it's going to be $3.99 if they wait till the end of the week. And then, where's the shipping and handling charge? There's no shipping and handling.
That's right, there's no shipping and handling. I forgot about that.
Exactly. That's where you make your money on these kind of deals. You probably could have thrown in a couple of Ginsu knives as long as you put $19.99 in shipping and handling charges on that thing.
I wanted to throw in the hairspray that covers the bald spots.
Yes, there you go.
We'll for the first 30 customers.
One of those man bras, you know? Awesome. All kinds of stuff you could have thrown in there.
The bros.
Yeah.
Yeah, the bros.
Well, that's all right. You know, we'll see how your strategy worked.
But, all right. I appreciate it.
Need a wall. I'm here for you.
Okay, I'm going to come to you.
All right, well, you know, now that we've self-promoted, let's just keep it going. No, I'm actually we're really excited about this, and I think our listeners will be as excited about this as they will be to read about Will Hopper. Jim Heisted, one of the talented members of the Fallow Productions team that produces the Windy City Poker Championship TV series, and worked with us on all the poker programming that we've done. He joined us on the last cruise. I think we mentioned this during the cruise show that he was around with his camera. And he produced an awesome promotional video for Antioch Cruises, if I may say so myself. And folks can go check it out at cruises.com, a brand new website.
Brand new website.
Actually, it's not a brand new website. It's the same exact website, but now with a cooler, shorter title.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, we could actually get this title out without making it sound like we're eating popcorn.
No slashes. We don't have to get any more, pay any more royalties to Guns N' Roses.
Yeah, yeah. Sorry, headbangers out there. Yeah, but AnnieUpCruises.com. You can watch it there. You can also go to AnnieUp's Facebook page, whatever they like it too, so I can be Chris. And watch it there. And I know you're going to get excited about joining us now. Once you do, you give me a call at 727-331-4.
And guess what, Scott?
What?
You dropped out.
Whoa, no!
Right, and during the phone number, too. That's it. Get another internet provider. 727-331-4335.
Oh, man. Verizon blows. All right, call that one number that Chris just gave you and book one of our 5 upcoming cruises out of Baltimore, Port Canaveral, Miami, New York City, and Tampa. But you know what I really liked about the video is, it sometimes it's hard to explain exactly what a poker cruise is.
Yeah.
You know, you do your best.
Yeah.
But and then you show a couple photos, so people go, oh, okay, all right, so it's live dealers, all right. But actually seeing the video and seeing how it all comes together and all the smiles in the room, I think, you know, it's only 3 minutes out of your life. That's a lot less than it's going to take you to read Chris's novella, right?
No, it's a novel. It's not a novella, but...
Oh, okay. You got any trashy women slapping each other?
Well, there is a trashy woman in it.
Excellent. All right.
But I won't go any further than that. How's that?
All right, one more self-promotion before we actually get to the...
And it's cruise-related. Go figure.
It is cruise-related, yeah. You know, speaking of our next cruise out of Baltimore, we're going to be doing a pre-cruise Antioch meetup at Dover Downs Hotel and Casino in Delaware on November 9th. That's the night before we set sail. I'm going to be up there. I'll be playing in the $100 buy-in, $5,000 guarantee tournament they have scheduled at 7 p.m. I'll be bringing a pair of those wonderful Blue Shock optics and putting a bounty on my head, or I guess probably a bounty on my eyes, right?
Yeah, I guess so.
So, you know that's going to be easy money.
Oh, yeah.
But you don't have to be going on the cruise to come out. You know, if you just live in the area and want to make a trip down there, come down and have some fun. I'll be staying at the hotel for the night, so, you know, there'll be some drinks being consumed after the tournament as well, too. So
I'm glad you said that, because clearly these people are going to have enough of you on the cruise that they don't need to come see you the day before, too, when they're packing. And
Well, maybe they're coming down early. Why not?
Yeah.
Coming down early, coming to Dover. It's a great place. You know, you can sit in that big that Crown Royal throne. There.
That's awesome. Yeah, I love that seat. That is awesome.
Yeah, folks haven't been to the Dover Downs Hotel Casino Poker Room, but it's sponsored by Crown Royal, and they have this massive throne there that you could sit in.
Yep.
And the manager at the time when we first visited was a big guy, right? He's, you know, and he looked like a little shrimpy sitting, and it was hilarious.
Cool seat.
Absolutely. And then speaking of Dover Downs, they're doing some fantastic stuff for Antioch, and they're going to be hosting our inaugural Antioch Poker League, brand new product that we're offering poker rooms. And so here are the details up there. You can earn points toward their league title by playing in and also cashing in their 7 p.m. Wednesday night tournaments from now through December 12th. The player with the most points after December 12th will win an Antioch Poker Cruise package for two. And a personalized champion's jacket from Antioch. Pretty sweet jackets, by the way.
Yeah.
I really enjoy them.
Yeah.
More details on that league can be found at doverdowns.com. And we're looking to do these Antioch Poker Leagues all across the country. There's no cost for poker rooms to participate. So ask the manager of your favorite poker room to give me a call. And that number is, if I don't cut out, 727-331-4335. And I'll be happy to help them, help he or she set up a league in that room so you two can play and win one of those cool jackets and join us on a future cruise.
Very cool. Very exciting. And we've always talked, you and I at least, or sometimes on the show too, we've always talked about some sort of league, you know, because I think I talked about it before when how I used to love going bowling all the time and there would be a league I'd be able to go every week and put some money in and whatever. And this is the same kind of thing. You know, you get to show up, play with the same people a lot of times and you're striving for something at the end, then it's really cool. It's a cruise with us, so cool. Good, great idea.
Well, you know, and I think it's perfect for the podcast listeners too, because we're such a tight knit community here,
right?
That you know, we love getting together for papes and things like that. So, You know, and I know, you know, at least on our forum at anniamagazine.com/forum, more shameless plugging. you know, often people say, hey, I'm going to be in an area. What are Anti Uppers around? So, you know, this is a way to get together and meet some fellow Anti Uppers in person and you know, have a fun league for a course of a couple weeks or months.
Absolutely. All right, our hotline is 813-448-1120. You call it, we use it, we'll give you something pretty cool. This is from Steven in Colorado.
I'm calling the hotline because I want to know something about six max, no limit hold'em games and live venues. I heard something on the PokerCast. It was kind of weird. I was thinking about it today because I'm a six max player online and I want to make the transition to live, but I just don't like playing full ring. So I was curious if you saw a movement towards some poker rooms around the country moving to or adding six max no limit hold'em table games. I think what I heard on the 2+2 Poker's cast was something to the effect that there were six max tables that were going to be opened up at the Wynn Casino in Las Vegas. I could be incorrect, but anyways, love the podcast. Listen to it all the time while I'm working on the golf course, and haven't really played a lot of live, but looking forward to seeing you guys next time you come to Colorado.
Well, you know, I got a couple of things to say about this. One, I, in all of our travels, I haven't seen it. Now, that doesn't mean that it's not out there or that it's not becoming popular after we've now returned from our travels. You know, I mean, just up until a couple of months ago, Scott and I had never seen a dealer's choice game. But then Scott saw one, what, in South Dakota, right?
Yeah, Deadwood.
So those things existed that we really weren't sure of. But we're doing our best to get to every poker room in the country. Right now, I haven't seen them. Have you seen them, Scott?
I have not. I know there's interest in them. I suspect part of the problem is, you know, again, this kind of gets to the economics of running a a poker room.
Yeah.
You know, a six max cash game, it's probably not going to generate the rake that a full ring table is. You know, obviously you get probably more hands in because it's fewer people, but the pots aren't going to be as big, I don't think. So I think there's a problem with that. And then the other thing, too, is, you know, I think people like to play 6-max, but I don't know a lot of people like to play 4-max or 5-max. So when you do a 6-max and you're only limiting it to 6 people, and somebody leaves, I think you're setting up that game to break a lot quicker than another game. And that's the last thing a poker room ever wants to do is have a game break. So I think it's going to be probably a tough road to hoe there. Certainly I know 6-max sit-and-goes I've seen in a lot of places, so I think those do exist, but probably not as much as we'd like. But cash games, I would love to. Maybe our listeners will know, and maybe somebody will send in somewhere out there that we haven't seen. But,
well, there's two other things too. You know, one, whenever you're playing a full ring game and it gets down to six-handed, there's always somebody saying, "Let's reduce the rake. Reduce the rake." Yeah. Now you're starting six-handed, you know what I mean, and you're already looking for the reduced rake. No one's going to deal that. That's just not cost effective because they're going to lose money.
Or you get one of those Mount Rushmore guys. It's like, I'm not playing six.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. And then,
Mount Rushmore guys the same thing.
If it's a busy room, right, and then you got a wait list, people are going to look at that table and be like, "There's a seat right there. Why can't I play?" And they're going to resent it. So there's going to be a lot of resentment among the other players for the rare few who want to play six max. You know, you're going to tick off a lot of people. So.
Yeah, it might be one of those things that rooms probably do on a slower night to get things going because, you know, I mean, we were speaking from our experience on the cruise, I mean, we'd love to get, you know, the biggest challenge every morning is getting people in the room and getting games going.
Yeah.
Get the games going, they're great. So, you know, if you can get a game going with six people and get it started, then all of a sudden it fills up. So maybe on a slower night, maybe some rooms, you know, it's going to be easier to get a six max going. So,
but we haven't heard
my suggestion to
a poker
room.
We just haven't seen them though live, and those are probably the real reasons why.
All right, Steve, we appreciate you calling the hotline at 813-448-1120. Everyone else, call that number, leave us a message, and we're going to give you something great. We're going to give Steven a classic tournament dealer button from tournamentbutton.com, which offers a variety of home dealer buttons with timers built right into them, so you can set the timer and wait for a six max game to start. And folks, you can customize these with your own photo logo. You can even have the Anti-Up logo put on it. Visit tournamentbutton.com, and if you buy something there, use the code Anti-Up, and you're going to get free shipping on your order.
Very cool. That's the other thing, too. If you want to buy my book, you use the code Anti-Up, and there won't be no shipping. How's that, Scott? Is that good? Is that good marketing?
Very good. All right, we're getting there. Baby steps.
Okay, our mailbag comes from Robbie this week. He said he recently bought a book at a thrift store called Profitable Poker, by Hubert Phillips. So now, see, this is what they call one of those modifiers that aren't in the proper place there. It should have said, he recently bought a book called Profitable Poker by Hubert Phillips at a thrift store. Because now it sounds like the thrift store is called Profitable Poker, yes, by Hubert Phillips. So
that would be awesome, wouldn't it?
That would be a cool thrift store. Oh, we got Bluffing from the Big Blind over here for $5.99. It's really cheap today. All right, so he says, the book talks about draw and stud poker, and instead of saying that they posted the big and small blind, he refers to it as the ante and the straddle. This book is written around 1967. I was wondering if that was the original name for small and big blinds, and then when they changed it to what they are today. I also would like to hear what other listeners think. Well, one of the things that I wonder is, since it was 67, you know, tournament poker didn't really come around until the World Series, you know. I wonder if that's when they decided, all right, we can't call it, you know, we can't call it the ante and the straddle, because that sort of indicates that the person is, you know, betting with cash or something. Maybe that's when they renamed it. I don't know if you're ever going to find when it got changed to that, if that is actually the case, that that was the original small blind and big blind terms. But because there are no authorities, you know what I mean? There's nothing authoritative about it, you know?
Yeah, I mean, the best part of this letter was I would also like to hear what other listeners think, because that gets us off the hook.
Yeah, that's true.
Maybe somebody else out there knows. But, you know, I did. I poked around on the web for a little bit. You know, really obvious. You know, when we get questions like this, I want to be able to give our listeners a good definitive answer. So,
right.
You know, I shut down the company for 4 or 5 days and scour the web for it. And I came up with nothing on this. I
mean, yeah, me too.
There's nothing out there that explains the history of blinds or antes or anything like that. So I don't know if Hubert's still kicking, but maybe you find his agent.
I wonder if it's
available.
Will
Hopper can help him.
Yeah,
that's right.
Is it available for $2.99 somewhere on Amazon? But really, I wonder if Jim McManus would know. You know, his Cowboys Full book has a lot of the history of poker. They had done that series through Card Player magazine at the time, and I wonder if he would know if that, you know, if that is the case and when it got changed to that. But it seems to me that it would be a tournament thing, that like right around the tournaments.
Or it could be a different game too. You know, I mean.
Yeah,
there's some games back there that you know, one person put a force bet in and they called it an ante, and then some idiot said, you know what, I want to raise blind, and they're like, all right, we're going to call that a straddle, and people just started playing like that for a while, and then eventually someone said, wait a minute, hold on, what the hell's an ante? What the hell's a straddle? These are force bets. Let's call them blinds.
Yeah.
There's two of them. What are you going to do? Well, the one smaller than the other one. Let's call that one a small one, and let's call the big one. That's genius. That's probably how it all happened.
I love listening to you have a conversation with yourself. The voices don't really change that much. It's pretty good, though. You're all right. You make a good schizophrenic.
Oh, man. All right, Robbie. We appreciate the stumper question. We got a stump. We don't have an answer for you. But maybe one of our listeners do. But we are going to send you a deck of J-Design playing cards, the official playing cards of Ante Up. Everyone else, get your own decks at the Ante Up Store at anteupstore.com. And quit asking us questions we can't answer.
Well, we can answer this one. Call the Floor came in this week. Yay! We got Call the Floors again. We're flush with Call the Floors. This one comes from Jan. Says, the local casino I play in has something called a one-chip rule. It was explained to me that throwing one chip in means always call. However, at the 200-400 level, the player in the small blind has in front of him two 100-unit chips. He throws in a 1,000-unit chip. The dealer and foreman rule this as a raise. When I asked how this is consistent with the rule, they told me that since he has chips on the table and throws some in, it is a raise. The other day, at the 100-200 level, same thing happened, this time with a 500-unit chip, but it was ruled a call, this time by the same floorman. The explanation given this time was that since there is only one chip on the table, and one being thrown in, it is a call. With two on the table, it's a raise. I don't find this logical and consistent, and I have actually seen this rule differently in the same casino by a different floorman. It seems they go with the intent of the player rather than any fixed rule. What do you think about that?
Well, this is what Jody thinks about that. I think they don't understand the rule. Although the big blind has two chips in front of him or her, the action to that player is 200 to call. By putting in a single chip, regardless of the denomination that player is calling, per the one chip rule, which is TDA Rule 38, oversized chip betting.
Yeah, and I think we had a nice little conversation about this with Nick, didn't we? When
Yes.
Right, okay. Because it sounded so familiar, I knew we had talked about this. So on a previous show, when they had their TDA summit, Nick had called in with some of the highlights of it. And this was one of the rules, I think, that they were discussing. And I don't know if it's changed or not, but I know that was one of the rules they were discussing. So, yeah, it's silly that they have the same guy making two different rulings based on the fact that he put his big blind out there in two chips instead of one. That's kind of silly.
Well, imagine this craziness. When you go to call or raise, you actually say call or raise. It's unfathomable, I know.
Scott's favorite thing to tell everybody in Poker 101.
But imagine that, where people actually verbalize their action. Mm. We'd be putting Jody out of business, all these floor people out of business. But, you know, I think what's funny about it is you're right. People get in arguments. Hey, there's two chips there, one chip there. You know, just freaking say what you're doing. Don't make the rest of us smart people have to argue over what the rules should be on this or that, you know?
Yeah, we don't want to interpret your intention. That's silly. Just say what your intention is.
Ridiculous.
Ridiculous.
But what's not ridiculous is the fact that we're going to send Jan a download of the Chinese 13-card poker app for Apple products from Smapsoft. You don't have to be a winner to enjoy this great app. You can download it yourself by visiting the iTunes store when you're downloading on Traceable.
Yeah, absolutely.
Now for the low price of $2.99, nothing else added in.
That's right. Free just shipping.
Just the book.
We will ship it free over the interwebs, no matter how heavy the book is. All right, we got a little housekeeping here. Remember the super fan show that was reminded of us last week from Christy from Maine? She's like, hey, we should do a super fan show. And we're like, hey, that's a great idea. Let's see if anybody's interested. Well, people are interested, ladies and gentlemen.
Picking up steam.
So far, Rich Santoro, Zorag, David Bloomberg, and Dan England have all expressed interest in being part of the super fan panel. So if you want to join them, email us at podcast@antiupmagazine.com, and we'll do our best to schedule that show very soon.
Yes, and we'll promise you it will be soon.
Yeah, it has to be soon.
I need to put some shows in the can for my next upcoming travels.
Yes.
But no, I'm looking forward to that, so I think it's a good idea, and we'll have some fun with it.
Now, you know, we always have a lot of fans in Canada. Now, this isn't nothing to do with the Superfan, but we do have some spots now. We're looking for some ambassadors from Canada. We might be expanding internationally. Very exciting stuff. You want to be an ambassador, be part of the Antiup Nation in our magazine, and you live in Canada, and you live near some poker rooms up there, why don't you apply at antiupmagazine.com/ambassadors. Damn it, now we got to give some royalties to Guns N' Roses there. Sorry.
Yeah, well, you know.
We got to have antiupambassadors.com. That's what we need.
Well, you just need to have Will Hopper track him down and kill him.
He doesn't kill people.
He doesn't kill people?
No, he just finds out who killed people.
God.
He's a detective.
Totally ruined the marketing of this book.
He's a detective, not an assassin.
Well, there's detectives that have itchy trigger fingers. Come on, I need the action.
He was an assassin at the poker table.
Oh, okay. Yeah, see how that works for you, buddy.
And don't forget
to like us on Facebook.
No, not Facebook. Just follow us on Twitter.
No, Facebook is so much more awesome.
Oh.
I mean, the stock price is down to like $16. Pretty soon I'm going to be able to buy Mark Zuckerberg out. So.
Yeah, we might be able to with the sales of Untraceable. I might be able to buy his other half of the shares and put him out of business altogether. All right, Scott, what news piled up on the Antiup news desk this week?
The World Series of Poker has announced this year's 10 nominees for induction to the Poker Hall of Fame. The 18 living members of the Hall and an 18-member media panel, not including us, will cast their votes by September 30th, with the selected members being inducted during the Octo-9 festivities. Nominated this year are, and I will, anybody got a counter out there? Let's see how many of these names I mangled.
Come on.
What do you think it's going to be?
It's going to be the first one and maybe the woman. But if you don't say her name, you don't need to say her last name.
You got high praise for me, sir. High praise for me. All right. Chris Bjorn.
No, Bjorn.
No, I know.
All right.
But why is he throwing the extra I in there?
I don't know. It's because Bjorn, not Bjorn.
Oh, okay. Chris Bjorn.
There you go.
From, like, Partouche. also, David Chu, Aaron Dratch.
Drake,
see? Told you. Eric Drake. Thor Hansen, nailed that one.
There you go.
George Hardy, Jennifer Harmon, Treniello.
Yeah, I don't know why they even have. Who cares? Go, Jennifer Harmon.
I'm sure Marco does.
Yeah.
He worked hard for that name.
Yeah.
John Jawanda, Tom McAvoy, Scotty Wynn, and Brian Sailor Roberts.
Okay, I'm just going to go on a limb here and say that Tom McAvoy and Brian Roberts deserve to be on there. Mm-hmm. Deserve to be in the hall. Not that the other ones don't, but I mean, of this list, if they only take two, I think those two need to go in first. And the other thing is that a huge oversight.
Wow.
Huck Seed is not on this list. And Huck Seed was born in 69. He's 40. He's old enough, and he's not only won bracelets and the world championship, but he also won the heads up and has played consistently in high stakes games his whole life and won at them. And he's a great ambassador.
Maybe it's just too early for him.
No, 40. Well, all you got
to
do is be 40.
Too early to be one of the 10 people. I mean, we had this. We had a good discussion on History Radio last night, and part of, you know, because they were asking me, you know, hey, Jack McClellan fell off the list from last year, Marcel Luce fell off the list from last year. You know, what do we think about that? And you know, I said that, you know, I'm not a fan of how they artificially limit this list, but you know, I'm not involved in it, so it's their thing, right?
Right.
But when it's artificially limited, you got to make some tough choices. And it's not like the Baseball Hall of Fame, where you know anybody that hit .198 for a season makes it on the ballot for 1 year and falls off after they don't get any votes. So, you know, so I think there are a lot of people that didn't make this list this year that probably should have.
I just don't see how George Hardy is over. And Chris Bjorn's a great player, obviously. He's got all his World Series catches and everything. But really, over a world champion who has multiple bracelets and the heads-up championship and has played in all those, you know, high-stakes games his whole life, too. I mean, he's a world champion.
You know, I was noticing this, too. I mean, are you sensing, maybe I'm reading too much into this, but I kind of sense a little bit that, you know, Caesars Entertainment is really on this worldwide push now. You know, they're pushing the World Series Poker to Europe. They get the deal in Australia, and that's really where they're pushing. And it seems like the list this year has a little bit more international flavor than what I remember previously.
Yeah, that could be very well a good point. I mean, I know Thor is international, and Chris Bjorn, and I don't know. I really don't know. I can't believe that Huck's not on that list. And I'm pretty sure that it was Doyle that was fuming about this too. I'd read that on Twitter somewhere. He was fuming about it. He was not happy. He probably nominated him and didn't get on there, but it just makes no sense. He's 40 now. He turned 40 and over John.
Let me ask you the next question then. If he was on here, would he beat out two of these other people?
He would probably beat out, I think that it should be Roberts and McAvoy. He might beat out McAvoy. You know, McAvoy's got a lot of bracelets too, probably, I think, more than him, but I'm not sure. I can't remember the time.
McAvoy's got 27 years on him too.
Yeah. I don't know, maybe you're right. I don't know. Of course, I don't expect all 10 to make
it. Doesn't
so.
Mean I mean it doesn't minimize what you're saying, that, you know,
right,
it's nice to be nominated, so, but I also wonder how big of a transgression it is if he didn't really have a legitimate shot to actually be inducted this year.
Well, you know, the thing too is if you do take the world title seriously, did Brian Sailor Roberts win it once? I can't remember. But other than that, McAvoy and Wynn are the only ones that have a world title here, you know. And, you know, to leave someone who has a world title and all the pretty much the same, you know, accomplishments as these guys and the world title, how is that? You know, Jennifer Harmon has two titles, you know, and she's fantastic. She's probably one of the best female players ever, and best players ever, really. I shouldn't say just female.
Humanitarian, too.
Yeah, and a humanitarian, but I don't know if that makes you a Poker Hall of Famer. You know,
well, eventually it will.
Yeah, exactly.
I think we can agree that one's a little early, too.
Yeah. I don't know. I'm just bringing that up for everyone to realize that guy's not on the list, and he is 40 and deserves to be on it, to me.
But, duly noted, sir.
Okay. For the low price of $2.99, we could put you on this list. All right. While Howard Lederer's lawyers were looking for some of his civil charges to be dropped in light of the Obama administration's interpretation of the WIRE Act, the Department of Justice is doing anything but backing down. This week, the department filed an amending complaint alleging that $42.5 million worth of purchases from Lederer, including several luxury cars and a custom-built house, were paid for with money from illegal proceeds. The DOJ is also seeking $42 million from Chris Ferguson, $40.8 million from Ray Bittar, and 11.7 from Rafe First.
Rafe got screwed, I think. That's my take. Everybody else got 30 million more, man.
Yeah, what's up with that? He's probably glad he didn't get that money now.
I don't think we're close to a settlement here. It doesn't seem that way, does it?
No way.
I mean, you're amending complaints, and I mean, the list of cars that they say Howard. I mean, obviously, I don't think there's any dispute that Howard bought them. I mean, it's the question is whether they came from just quote unquote illegal proceeds. But,
yeah, right.
But a nice little life that he'd been living up
Jeez.
Until then. You know, I think about that when we were trying to squeeze 3 tubs of poker chips in my wife's 12-year-old Ford Focus the other day.
Or when we were sitting there begging their print ad manager to get to buy an ad from us for, you know, $500 or $1,000, and this guy is driving $42 million worth of cars.
Well, we'll see how that plays out. But finally, this week, Peter Konas of the Czech Republic survived 36 hours, 34 minutes, and 11 seconds. I mean, can you imagine that? Who is the timer there?
Yeah, man.
Is it over? Is it over? 11 seconds.
Click.
All right, survived 36 hours, 34 minutes, 11 seconds to win the Ironman Poker Challenge at the casino of Delaware Park. Casino officials have sent documentation of the event to the Guinness Book of World Records, believing the event qualifies for the world record for the longest continuous poker tournament.
Yep, and we'll have a photo of that guy in this next issue coming out in October. And, yeah, he looks tired.
Yeah.
All right, we get to kick off a new O'Malley's Move this week. And next week we'll be back with our final thoughts on it. Let's see what happens.
Hello, and welcome to another O'Malley's Move. I'm Malcolm O'Malley. This week, we are seated at a $1, $2, no-limit hold'em home game. We are somewhat shorthanded, with 7 seated at the table. We are in the small blind with $250. It's fairly early in the night, but this is our regular home game, so we know most of these players and their tendencies. Under the gun and plus one both fold. The MP folds, and the cutoff makes it $7 to go. A standard raise for this table. The button folds, and we see the ace of spades, 7 of clubs. Since it's early in the night, everyone has almost identical stacks. Our opponent sits with about $10 more than us. She's a solid player, so this raise from the cutoff could be either a steal attempt or a solid hand. But we want to set the tone for the evening that we won't be pushed around on our small blind. We call, and the big blind folds. The pot is $16, and the flop comes the Queen of Hearts, 4 of Hearts, Deuce of Hearts. A swing and a miss, big time. But it is a suited flop, which often scares people. We're going to take an aggressive line on this pot and try to strong-arm our opponent out. She's solid enough to realize we could have hit this. And if she has something like jacks or king-queen, she might fold to a bet. We make it $10 to go, but she calls. We narrow her range down and factor in some tells. She seems pretty confident. This could very well be aces, kings, or ace-king with a heart. She also might have queens. Some other hands could be jacks with a heart, or king-queen with the king of hearts. But we don't see her playing much weaker hands than these for a raise pre-flop and then a call on such a wet board. The pot is now $36, and the turn is the queen of diamonds. This is an interesting card. Could we have represented ace-queen? Most players at this table know we usually don't 3-bet ace-queen pre-flop, so it's possible. We set out on a plan for this hand, and we're not going to stray from it. In this situation, the cards are irrelevant. We make a $20 bet, and just as we suspected, she goes into the tank. She appears to be calculating the pot odds, and maybe even the implied odds. While she's doing this, we narrow her range. There's a good chance we can eliminate queens, jacks, and king-queen with the king of hearts. We're also pretty sure she's got us on ace-queen, unless she's Hollywooding, which she doesn't do often. She begrudgingly calls, and the river is the deuce of clubs, putting 2 pair on the board. The pot is $76. So, do we have another round in the chamber?
Every once in a while, we get such a detailed letter from one of our listeners that we can't just do it justice in the mailbag or even our banter sections of our show. And a few weeks ago, we got just such a letter from Peter Bura.
That sounds like the district attorney guy. What the hell is that guy's name?
Free Bahara.
Yeah, it sounds the same.
Yeah, this is Peter Bura.
Okay, so it's totally different. Sorry. Yeah.
Peter Burrow sounds better.
Burrow.
I mean, it doesn't sound as good as Bossier.
Just don't ask you to say bull, that's all. We don't want you to say bull.
No bull.
No bull.
All right, anyhow, Pete wrote this great letter. That's the takeout here, right?
Okay, yep.
And it's about the tax implications of poker. And later this year, we're going to plan to invite our anti-ups tax expert, Ann Margaret Johnston, to be on the show to kind of give us tips on how to handle our poker winnings for all six of you out there that actually have those from a tax perspective. But today, I think we're going to take our best shot at answering some of these insightful questions from Pete. And he brings up some good points that I think some folks probably out there in our listenership have been thinking on their own and just haven't taken time to write us.
Well, here's what we're going to do. Since you handle the money of the business, and clearly I'm not the brightest person in the world, too, because I let you do that. But since you handle the money of the business, I'm going to read the question, and then we'll have your thoughts. And then if I think of anything that's remotely interesting, I'll chime in. But here are his questions. Here's the first one. There is continual mention of how much the government is missing out on so much money by not allowing legalized online gambling. And when I see that all the time, I always say regulated. I kind of change it to legalized because a lot of people say legalized online poker, and I'm like, it's not illegal. So I always change it to regulated. But there's also online gambling that they're trying to get rid of. So
exactly.
I assume this is mostly from the perspective of taxing the sites which offer the games rather than the players. If someone analyzed how much net income wins, less losses, whatever, poker players earn during a given year, I assume the number is negative in probably 98% of the population. Only the gaming sites would know the actual percentage, but even if it's somewhere over 90%, the government stands to make little, if any, from the players themselves.
Yeah, I think his first point was right, is that really the money grab here is from the operator standpoint, not
sure.
From the players. So, and here's a real-life example. The busiest poker room here in Florida does an average of about $1 million in poker revenue each month, right?
Mm-hmm.
In Florida, because of how the laws are here, the state gets 10% of that. So that's $100,000, right?
Right.
And then obviously they'll make some more money on other taxes on the property, from property taxes and food and beverage, that kind of stuff, right?
Right.
But that's one single brick and mortar room. All right. Now factor that at a nationwide online poker room per month, and I think you can quickly see how much money the government is missing out by letting folks like Lock Poker run untaxed online games instead of licensing, regulating, and taxing them. So, he's right. There's very little tax implications from the player perspective.
Right.
Because, as much money as somebody wins at a poker game, somebody's going to lose more because some of that money isn't on the table anymore because it goes to the operator, right?
Right.
So that's it's less than a wash there. So really what we're talking about is generating money from the sites. And I think it is significant.
I 100% agree. I mean, what's funny is when the good example too is when there is a tie in a hand, nobody won money. Oh no, wait a minute, the house won money, and that's how you know that the house every hand wins money, no matter what. The house always wins money, so they're always going to make more money than you, no matter how much you rake in. And and the other thing too is you're right. It's so difficult to tax individually how much money you're winning or losing. Because, your bankroll during the night, so you play for 5 minutes, all of a sudden you get a phone call and you got to leave, you're up $12. Uh-oh, now I'm up 12, that's a win, now I got to keep track of that $12. Then you go out, and then you come back and you play again, you lose 15. Was that one session? Did you actually lose three for the day? Or is that now you had a $12 winning session and a $15 losing session? I mean, it's just crazy. It's almost impossible to really keep track of all that, no matter how intricate their records are going to be. So you really want to just keep track of all the big money, which is the house.
Yeah, and if you still don't believe me, rewind the show to our Annie of News Desk.
Mm.
and see how much money
Howard Lederer and those guys.
Howard Lederer and those folks took out of the company to know how much money we're talking about here. So yeah, so that's where the money grab is.
Okay. How many poker players who specialize in cash games actually report anything close to their actual income, given that it's nearly impossible to track by the IRS? Seems if you're a professional poker player, you just would work your entire life on a cash basis to avoid the 30 to 40% bite. All you need is a vault.
Have you ever priced vaults?
They're pretty expensive.
They are pretty expensive.
Installation alone is like a couple of grand.
You know, and then, yeah, then you got the guy going, seriously, sir, what do you have to put in a vault? Hold up in your wife's Ford Focus. You're just wasting my time. All right, well, this is what I'll say here. In our country, you are required to report all income, even if you don't get a 1099 or W-2 showing as an income. Even if you sell $26 at the garage sale, that's technically something you should be filing on your return.
That's right. When you guys all buy my book for $2.99, I'm going to have to report that income.
Absolutely. How bearish you're going to be? I mean, you sell this year, Mr. Casenza, seven.
Seven. I've already sold more than seven, so relax.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, your mom really likes it.
I know. She bought seven copies.
Okay, now, obviously, in reality, most recreational poker players are never going to report gambling on their tax returns, you know, that $100 you win at the 1-2 table. But it doesn't change the fact that anyone who does it runs the risk of being charged with tax evasion. And just in case you don't think that you will be pinched by the feds for tax evasion, you know, remember, you be sure to kiss that wife tonight and tell her how much you love her.
That's right.
Because when that marriage goes downhill, guess what?
Hello, IRS? I know someone who's cheating.
But no, seriously, I mean, and here's the thing, too, is, you know, we're joking around about it a little bit, and you're right, you know, no one's going to, you know, report that $300 they won at the local tournament. But this is how the government took down Al Capone. You know, this guy killed or ordered the murders of enough people to fill a baseball stadium. He ran all these illegal enterprises, and what brought him down was tax evasion. You know, they show up at this big posh Chicago hotel where he's living, and they look at his tax returns. There's no way he can pay for it.
Yeah.
Bingo. So, yeah, I mean, they take that stuff seriously. But here's the other point, too. I mean, I don't think his question, he was actually suggesting that people not report any income, just a little less than you're bringing in. But the other point I'll bring out is a professional gambler, or a poker player at least, is a recognized profession by the IRS. And, you know, it's not necessarily easy to prove that. It takes some time, a couple of years, I think, to show that you are. But once you are able to do that, you're able to deduct a bunch of business expenses, which includes your travel and tournaments, you know, your food there, your training, you know, buying untraceable. All that stuff is deductible. And so, sure, a player would net a lot more money if they didn't report any income to the government. But I'm going to guess that most players are making the conscious decision to take a little bit less profit doing anything above board and enjoying those tax deductions, and it's probably not that much more than being a scofflaw.
Right. I found it interesting that you brought up Al Capone and he brought up the vaults. I was wondering if Geraldo Rivera was going to be a guest on the show. Remember that when he had the vault and he's like, we're going to see what's in Al Capone's vault, and it was nothing. It was all garbage and biggest just embarrassment on national TV in the history of television.
I will never forget that because I was in seventh grade band. Yes, I was a nerd, playing third string trumpet. I didn't even call it third string, right? That's how long it's been.
Yeah.
A third trumpet or whatever. And I was ticked off because I wanted to be home watching Geraldo knock that thing down and watch the coins all fall out. And so I had to get home and I had to rewind the Betamax. You know, with the remote control with the string on it.
Yeah.
And watch it and just see him saying, that's it, that's all we found, a bottle. Thanks for tuning in.
And that's what happened, too. The vault guy said to Capone, really, you have anything you really want to put in this vault? He said, I got a bottle. Oh, okay, we'll build this vault for you and you put a dollar in there. or Vala.
Well, they probably didn't pay taxes on that bottle.
That's true. That's probably another reason they locked them up. Okay, question number three. Why would any professional poker player choose tournaments over cash games? It seems that the big winners from the World Series, for example, are Caesars with a 10% rake and the government with a 25 to 35% rake, depending on tax bracket. So with a 40% rake on all tournament buy-ins, who in the heck can ever make money over the long term in tournaments? Obviously, if you final table a major event and make seven figures, that's an exception. But the lion's share of poker players could never achieve anything worthwhile. I would venture that upwards of 99% of tournament players are net losers in the long run.
He's a dream crusher, Chris.
Oh,
we can all dream, right? Well, I'll answer that. I'm sure you got some stuff to say about this, too. But I believe I'm a fairly decent tournament player, and I also believe I'm an awful no-limit cash game player, right? So that's a very simple example of someone who would profit more by playing tournaments over cash games, even with the issues that he mentioned there. I mean, it is much tougher to win money in a tournament, but if you suck at cash games and you're somewhat decent at tournaments, it doesn't matter whether it's harder to cash at tournaments or not, because that's your gravy train there. All right, and then obviously, I mean, you're forgetting the notoriety and the endorsement possibilities for tournaments, right?
Yep.
You know, no one knows who's winning cash games. I mean, some of them are have some notoriety, but you're not going to be on TV or anything like that. So that's a lot of extra money. You know, I think we can remember is a lot of those old school cash game players realized that whole thing early in the poker boom and switched to tournaments. Xiao Zhang, right?
Right.
He was talking about how, you know, hey, you know, I'm doing great in cash games, but all the attention's in tournaments. I better start playing tournaments.
Yeah, a lot of people, too, said that their kids don't believe that they play poker for a living because they don't see him on TV, so they started playing tournaments just so they could prove to their kids that they are on TV.
Definitely easier to get backed in tournaments than cash games, I think. Maybe I'm wrong on that, but I would think that's correct. So, I mean, that's just a couple reasons right there. Right. And let's not forget that little tiny issue of tax evasion.
Well, you can report your cash game winnings. You don't worry about tax evasion.
But he's suggesting that you don't because there's no paper trail.
Oh, yeah. No, I know. That's true. One of the things I want to mention here, and you always do this too, is they always say the lion's share and think it means the majority. Lion's share means everything. And it's a big difference. People mistake that all the time. Even you, Scott, you always say lion's share, but you don't mean that. But I think that...
I'm a slave to cliches, Chris.
I can totally see what he's saying, though, as far as how it's tough to win in tournaments consistently enough. I mean, we always hear about how much money it costs people to actually be on the tour and to make these trips and to pay these buy-ins. And you think about, really, if you wanted to play a tournament a week, you know, a tournament series every week, and it's $10,000 for the main, which it's not always 10 now. Now they're down 35. But let's just say it was $5,000 and you were playing one a week. All right. I mean, that alone is $260,000. Okay. For a year. That's just buy-ins for one tournament a week at $5,000. So if you don't win one of those tournaments, you know what I mean? You're not going to get $260,000 very easily back in your pocket.
Right.
And when they say you finish in 10% of the tournaments, you cash. You know, as a good player, about 10 to 20% will cash. So now you're thinking, okay, and that cash doesn't mean you're going to win 10%. You're not going to win the tournament 10% of the time. You're just going to cash 10% of the time. So it is very difficult to be a tournament player. So I think the most successful players are generally, most of them, or they play tournaments when they're big enough buy-ins where they can make enough money, and then they play cash games on the side to supplement. So,
sure.
But I agree with them there, though. It's tough to be a professional poker player as just a tournament player. It's not easy.
Absolutely.
Okay, and this one is, if the government does legalize online gaming, or we should say regulate, I assume this would require the site to track your social security number, etc., for the site to file a 1099 to the government each year to report your net income. If this is the case, who would ever play poker online if they had a casino poker room available? What am I missing here? If I play cash in a casino and make $1,000, I get to go and spend it tax-free.
Well, there's this pesky thing about tax evasion. but no, he's right. there would be a cash game paper trail online that doesn't exist as clearly as one in the brick and mortar room. I'm going to give them that. But here's the thing. You can't multi-table live, right?
Right.
We talked about trying to find a way to do it.
Right.
No one ever took our ideas, right?
Right.
No one ever listens to us.
No.
But you can multi-table online, and also remember you get stiffer competition live. So there's lots of things that I think that contribute to your overall win rate that makes online poker far more profitable for a lot of players.
Right.
I'm going to guess that the best online poker players in the world will make tons more money online, even paying taxes completely above board, than they would by playing live and not reporting any income, let alone enough to throw the sentence of the dogs off, right?
Right.
I mean, it's just a different product. And then I'll finish by saying, well, there's not an official paper trail with live cash games. Don't forget the eye in the sky up there.
That's right.
You know, there's a video trail of everything that happens in a casino. And, you know, unless you stash that cash under your mattress, you know, you're going to, when you deposit money in the bank account, you're creating a paper trail there, and that money's going to match up at some point to what's on your income. So, you know, you never know when the IRS is going to come knocking on your door, and if you're like, hey, Scott, I'm not married, I'm not getting divorced, well, congratulations, but maybe you'll go into business with the guy that decides he wants to be an author. Or, you know, that guy you check raised out of a huge pot and got ticked off at you. It doesn't matter. Whoever calls the IRS, you never know. And when they do, you know, they're going to be able to, you know, subpoena recordings probably, bank records. And if they really want to, they can reconstruct your sessions. I mean, obviously, they're not going to be able to figure out everything perfectly. But really, again, remember, this is how the government works. All they need to do is get just enough to get you to sweat a little bit, right?
That's right.
And then maybe you plead down to a fine, or they get a jury to convict you. So, I mean, it doesn't have to be the whole – they don't need a whole dossier here. They just need enough. So, again, I'm not telling anybody not to report any income, but, you know, I think the government doesn't really care if that four nickels you made by selling your old baseball cards doesn't show up there. But when you're not reporting a lot of casino income, somebody's going to notice at some point.
And there are some assumptions being made in his question here, too. I don't necessarily think we know for a fact that cash game records will be kept. You know, you have your Social Security number online for the 1099s if you happen to win more than $5,000 in a tournament or something. But I don't know. We don't know for a fact if you're kept. I'm not saying that, because it's not being kept, you should keep all that money and not report it.
Right.
What I'm saying is we don't know that it's going to be cash games that's regulated or monitored or sent 1099 forms for.
You know, that's a fascinating point, because, you know, right now in a casino, if depending on jurisdiction, you win anything over $5.99 or a tournament is $5,000, depending where it is. I mean, they issue a form, and if not, they don't. So, you know, online, when it gets regulated, it'd be interesting to see how they do that. If, you know, it's an individual score on a tournament or a particular night that meets that threshold, or if it's just when you withdraw enough money that, you know, and it could be both. I would hope not. But, you know, yeah, you're right. There's a lot of assumptions being made here that we don't know yet.
So we'll see. We'll see how it goes. But, again, you know, just report your income. We don't want you writing us from jail. We get enough prisoners writing us. That's a totally different subject matter, but we don't want any more of you doing it. So, all right. Well, that was pretty cool. I really wasn't sure how that was going to go, but I think that was a great topic for us to discuss. And, of course, I'm looking forward to Ann Margaret Johnson being on the show sometime so we can talk a little bit more about stuff that we don't know what we're talking about and get some more tax questions answered.
Absolutely. But, very good discussion. So we appreciate the letter, Pete.
This is Noah Brunson, and you're listening to Annie Up.
All right. Hand of the week comes from Chris Drake. Been on the show before. Love the Drake.
Love the Drake. He's been around a while.
Yeah, it's been a long time. Actually, I looked, I did my little swag shelf spreadsheet to find out last time we gave him something. It's been a couple of years.
Wow.
So he's obviously due for something. But yeah, it just proves that he's been with us for a while. So, his hand here is Omaha 8. your favorite game.
All right. I'll have you know that I destroyed the Omaha full kill game when I played it, so on the show.
Excellent. So you got your chops going here.
Right? Yeah, I won all of a couple of bucks, so.
All right, well, he says, again, he's from Toledo. It reminds us he's Chris with a K.
Yes.
And that's pretty easy. You know, I don't have trouble reading, guys. I have trouble talking.
Oh, I think you have trouble doing both.
Okay, thank you.
Yep, you're welcome.
All right, so he says he's a long-time listener, long-time emailer. That's totally correct.
It is true.
He says he doesn't email often, but when I do, it's rather lengthy, and he's apologizing now. So, you know, if you guys don't have a sandwich in front of you, go ahead and make one. All right, so here's the thing. He went to the new Hollywood Casino in Toledo. Lovely place. I enjoyed visiting there. Right?
Cool.
Downloaded the Bravo Poker Live app for a smartphone and had mixed feelings of excitement and anticipation the week prior when I saw they were spreading 1-2 no limit, 3-6 limit, 2-5 no limit, 5-10 no limit, 2-5 PLO, and 5 or 6 people had an interest list for 3-6 Omaha 8 or better. So we got in there. There were a couple no limit games going, didn't see much else. He got seated immediately. At a new table because they had 5 people on a list, and another table just broke. Because half those players moved to 2-5 game, which just opened up. After only half an hour play, I could tell my players were horrible.
Are we ever going to see a hand today?
I'm getting there. Calling out all possible my pair of 3N, winning that.
So he grew up the son of a factory worker.
Yes,
and
exactly.
Okay, what's the hand here? Let's get to the hand.
All right, we're getting there. All right, so he ends up at the 3-6 Omaha 8 table, right?
Okay.
All right. And here's kind of the discussion of the people here. We'll get to the hand eventually, but he's setting this up.
Jeez.
He says, I instantly run over. I was greeted by another player, a 7-year-old lady. That lady had 2 or 3 other old people around her. It's picking on us now, I think.
Maybe.
So they eventually got this game going. He was the youngest player by far, and he's never played Omaha 8. So first of all, you want to know whether this is a typical player pool for Omaha 8 at 3-6 level.
Typically, 3 of the people are dead at your table.
Yes, yeah, so he's very typical here.
Yeah.
So. Okay, so not only are the players old here, he goes on to say that no one ever raises.
Ah, yeah, that makes sense.
It's fairly consistent with what I've seen, right?
Yeah.
No one likes to raise pre-flop, and then a little kid like me sits down and raises. You know,
they all grumpy.
Yeah. So that's kind of the play. That kind of sets up the hand that he sends in here. He said, again, there are a few callers, and it gets to him, and he has the ace of clubs, the deuce of clubs, jack of hearts, king of hearts.
Okay.
What do you do?
Well, you know, I like old people mad at me, so I'll raise with it. But really, I mean, you got the nut flush draw and clubs. You've got the nut low draw and clubs. You've got 3 working for Broadway, 2 working for a straight flush, 2 working for a steel wheel, 2 working for the second nut flush of a hand. I mean, it is a pretty good hand. I'm not going to deny it. It's a pretty decent hand. I'd like to have another low card in there if I could, but I mean, I don't know if I'd raise with this hand. In our home game, I might just call, and you know, because everyone's playing ace-deuce. But you know what? Why not? Let's build a pot.
Well, yeah, I think you're right. We got a lot working for us here. And, you know, what's interesting about these low-end Omaha games is I tend to raise with crappier hands because I like to try to drive people out and then, hope I catch with the smaller pool.
Right.
And I tend to not raise too much with my good hands because I don't want to chase people out. But, you know, if it is a table like he's talking about here where no one leaves, then obviously I change that strategy. I'm not going to, you know, raise with crappy hands because then I'm just building a pot for someone else.
Yep.
But I'm going to raise with my good hands because I'm going to build a pot for myself. And, you know, we got a good two-way hand here. I mean, if it ends up with a high flop, we got high cards, double suited, and if it's low, we got the nuts right now. So let's build a pot. All right, as we know, he says he makes the second and last ever pre-flop raise in this game.
I'm going to make it a min raise here.
He's probably got his picture on the wall there. All right, and the flop comes down, the tray of spades, 5 of hearts, king of spades. All right, so we got a nut flush draw working, and nut low draw.
Nut low draw, right. We got the wheel going, and we got top pair, top kicker. We got all kinds of stuff. We got a wheel draw, we got a low draw, we got everything.
Yep, yep.
The backdoor hearts.
Yep, absolutely, yeah. And it checks around to us. What do we do?
Well, of course we bet.
Of course.
Why raise and pretty much hit this flop exactly what you need to hit, other than they're already the nut low nut flush? I mean, really, let's get some money in there.
Absolutely. You know, we are betting on the comma here a little bit, but we got a lot of draws here.
Yeah, we got a made hand. We got kings. What an ace. We're good.
Made hand. All right, so that's exactly what he does. He bets, and he says, build a pot again? Question mark? Why, yes, exactly.
Yes.
And, you know, also at this point, I mean, while no one ever folds pre-flop in this game, on the flop, I think you tend to get people out. Now, generally, with this kind of player base, this game, almost everybody's playing low, I've noticed.
Yeah.
So you're not getting anybody out here. But what's good about this is you're going to get a bet out of them now because everybody still thinks that low is going to get there.
That's right. Some people are playing ace-4 right now, hoping for the deuce.
And really, at this point, I don't want just a low. I want the, you know, of course, you never want just a low, but there probably is some other ace deuce out there right now. But maybe you got some ace fours maybe out there too that are going to throw some bets in here.
That's what I said.
Yeah.
And then you're hoping somebody has king queen and they're going to high where they're thinking they're high and that's the best high out there and you got ace king. So, you know, there's all kinds of possibilities here. We got to put some money in the pot. We're standing in good standing right here. So.
All right. The turn is the eight of spades. And once again, everyone checks.
Sure, we got the nut low now. I mean, yeah, there's a chance of you getting quartered here, but you know, you still got top pair, top kicker, and the nut low. No reason not to put more money in, right, Scott? But it's a turn bet. Now the bet could be bigger, so now you're going to get more people out if they don't have ace-deuce, right?
Well, here's the problem, though. The spades got there.
Right.
So I'm not really confident that we're going to get the low now. I mean, the high now.
The high, right.
And while we have the low, it is entirely possible that we're being quartered right now and somebody else has it. So I'm at this point, I'm going to slow down, hope I'm wrong with the spades. Maybe another king or something will come on the river, and I have a shot, an outside shot of scooping this whole thing, or at least getting more than the quarter right now, which is what I'm expecting. So,
okay, well, I have
a
couple
really
of questions.
I want to put a bet in here, because I don't want to get raised and build a huge pot for when I'm getting quartered, because every time I'm quartered, I'm losing money.
Let me ask you a question. When he bet on the flop, did we find out how many people called him?
He didn't say, so I'm assuming everybody did.
Oh, everybody called, geez.
I could be wrong. He doesn't say.
All right. So then the spades get there, but then it checks all the way to us again. If somebody has a flush, wouldn't they have bet now?
Well, again, I mean, this is what's very frustrating, I think, for folks learning to play Omaha 8, is that when you read books or watch it, the game changes dramatically from this 3-6 limit. Everybody that's been alive for the Civil War playing game. Versus maybe a 4-8 where you get a younger crowd that's a little more sophisticated and plays it sophisticated is the wrong word, but plays it a little bit more aggressively.
Mm.
You know, so my experience is these folks end up checking. I would be surprised if somebody turns over a queen high flush at the end here.
Okay.
And it was just scared to bet because it wasn't the absolute nuts.
I just feel like if they're not that educated or not that good at it or whatever, that they had ace-deuce, they'd have bet two by the time it got to us. Someone would have bet the flush. Something would have been happening here with those two hands being made, and we have it too. I don't know. I mean, I agree with the check isn't a bad play, you know, because then you're not risking so much on the end. You're going to check, you're going to call if they bet. But if it goes check, check, check again around and you still have the nut low, are you still checking? I mean, on the river? I don't know. I got the nut low, and I got top pair, top kicker, which
might
not be
good.
But
we're on the turn right now.
No, I know, but I'm just saying that thinking is someone really going to check raise you in this game? I don't know. Okay, but I think I would bet. I just think I would. I feel like if there was an ace-deuce out there in this game, someone would have bet it. Their nut low got there, and they bet. No one bets now? They're check calling the rest of the way? That sounds like a good play. To check it.
Yeah, and again, it's a frustrating way to play this, to learn this game, because that's exactly what people do. I mean, people don't like to bet the lows. They like to, really, this kind of player base doesn't ever like to bet anything but the scoopable nuts.
Mm.
You know, unless they brought somebody over from no limit hold'em, they're showing it doesn't know how to play, then that changes the whole game. But generally, these players, my experience, other people's experience might be different. But, you know, they like to wait until they've got it all locked up.
Right.
To bet. And the river is where all the betting is. Right now, everybody's scared about somebody else. But I could be wrong. But that's generally how I see. And that's why I also don't really like to play that 3-6. I like to get it up into that 4-8 full kill or something where you weed some of those players out and you get some more true Omaha play going on. But,
yeah. Okay, well, that's the other thing, too, is I don't know how many people are remaining with us. If it was two people, I would bet it. If it was eight,
completely different.
Yeah, then I think the flush is out there. But so I don't really know what's going on. But generally, if I feel like everyone's checked to me again on the turn, I would bet this hand. But again, if it's heads up, I would definitely bet it because I'm splitting it. If it's three handed, I might bet it because it could be two guys going for the flush and no low, and I've got the nut
low.
Very
true.
So I really don't know what's going on here. It's tough to. But anyway, let's just say you would check it and I would bet it and see who's screwed in the end.
I have a feeling both of us will.
He probably will.
All right, so our hero does bet, and he says the 60-year-old lady check raises him, Chris.
Wow, he did get check raised. I can't believe it.
Right now, you're getting screwed.
Yeah, I'm getting screwed right now. I should have checked.
All right, wow. Well, hero says, I instantly realized I made a mistake because only about five hands earlier when she lost a big pot trying to play her ace four spades on the board. Player ace spades four. I'm not sure why, but but he knew instantly now that she had the nut flush, and he wasn't going to make the same mistake twice. The river did not help him, and I guess it's heads up at this point. So she bet, and of course we're going to call here, right? Because
we got the nut low. Unless it was a deuce or an ace on the end. Counterfeiting us, I'm going to call a one bet and try to get half my pot back. And if she quarters me, well, then what else is I going to do? I would have saved one bet if I had checked the river. I mean, the turn, so.
All right, so he simply calls her bet, hoping to be split. But, of course, she has the ace of spades, deuce of spades.
Jeez.
And we get quartered. And her hero says, I felt dumb.
Well, I mean, you know, your check on the turn now is brilliant. But I just don't understand why, with that many people in the hand, I would check the turn with that nut hand. You just said before, people don't want to bet unless they have nut-nut, and she had nut-nut, and she didn't bet.
Both, yeah, so this is out of the norm of the player profile, yes. So, but, you know, that's what we have to encounter as poker players, right? People not playing optimally, and, you know, that's why I think it's tough when we do Hands of the Week in general. People are like, oh, he absolutely has this, or he absolutely has that. It's almost impossible to ever know that.
It is.
Because some people just are not good. And I mean, some people are really good and play it differently. So,
I mean,
we're both shocked here.
Yeah, I mean, it turned out that she got what she wanted and she maximized her profit probably. But really, tell me what would have happened if a deuce came on the river, which pairs the board, somebody has pocket kings or pocket jacks. Now she gets no low and she gets no high. And she did that because she didn't bet the turn. Maybe she would have gotten somebody out. And I don't know if a set would have folded, but when you're splitting it, you know, it's a high-low game. Sometimes sets do fold. You know, a set of jacks might have folded there. You know, I just, because that spade comes, it gives him a flush. Now he realizes he has to hit 10 outs to make his high, and it's only half the pot. And then on top of that, it might not even be good because you only have pocket jacks. I mean, who knows? But really, she's taking a huge chance of getting counterfeited and losing the nuts. The board pairs, she doesn't have the nuts anymore. And that's just, to me, is a poor check. I mean, she got lucky. She got this guy who's really aggressive to bet. You know, Chris apparently had this image that he was going to keep betting it. So she knew he would, and he did. And then she got an extra bet out, two bets out of him. Well, I don't know, maybe he could check the river, but he probably wouldn't have if she had checked again. But anyway, wow. I never put somebody on the nut flush, nut low there. I just really didn't because no one bet it twice.
Yeah, I mean, I guess in her defense, she was probably just expecting this young brash kid. And I don't know how young Chris is. He might be old, too. He's talking about her maybe being old. Was probably on a fire, and then she would check raise. And again, we don't know how many people, you're right, we don't have people in their hand. So there might have been some people in between. And if she knew that he bet, she'd get a couple callers there, and then her raise would get more money out. That'd actually be a smart play.
Yeah.
You know, it's tough to say because we don't know exactly how many people were in it and where they were, but there would be that's one situation where you might want to play it this way, but you're also taking a huge gamble thinking that somebody else is going to bet your hand for you. I see this happen a lot on the river in this game. You know, oh, I thought you were going to bet, Scott.
Yeah.
Why am I going to bet your hand? Oh, yeah, I was trying to build a pot for myself. I get to the river and I don't catch. I'm done. You know, you need to bet your own hand now. You know, you're sticking around calling me all the way to the river and the flush gets there. What do you have? I know what you have. You turn your cards face up.
I guess the lesson here, too, is, like you said, to check the turn there as Chris is probably the wisest move because you're only going really one way with his hand. And at the end, you know, if they all check to you again, maybe you put in a little value bet. But really, he lost. He had to bet another six. They didn't want to have to bet on the turn and then call another six, only to be quartered at the end. So that's probably the lesson to be learned here. If you're not going high and low with your hand, maybe you slow down a little bit and save yourself a bet. Because there's limit poker. Limit poker is about saving a bet and earning an extra bet when you can.
Yeah, and I think what gets difficult here, too, is you know, you might be able to get some people off of hands by representing the flush there. I mean, obviously, the way you're playing it, you're not screaming flush because you're betting the whole way. But, I mean, there's probably something to be said for somebody. Everybody else looking at the board going, well, you know, I don't want any spades, so I'm getting out of this thing. And might be able, but I think the risk really is getting raised there. It happens more often than driving everybody out. And he's saying everyone here, so there had to be at least three people in this hand.
Right.
Four, so again, it's a completely different heads up. But his final thought was, you know, hey, I read a book a long time ago about Omaha 8 or better that said a loose Omaha 8 or better game with five or more players in a hand is a profitable game. He says, I always guess because with five or more people getting quartered isn't so bad. Well, it is bad, especially if you're the only caller on the river.
That's right. That's right.
But, you know, he's right. I mean, this is kind of why I like to play it, is because so many people are in these hands. I mean, there's no Omaha 8 game in the world that five people should be seeing a flop to.
Right.
I mean, everybody's just playing substandard hands at that point. And I'm usually one of them. But, but no, I mean, no one should be playing that. So, you know, what I told him is it is profitable, but where it's profitable is knowing that you... I mean, I usually loosen up in these games. I play a wider range pre-flop and hope I hit, because I know these players are passive and I can bet them off of hands, or if I hit my hands, I'm going to get paid off. The real key here is being very specific on getting out if you miss on that flop.
Yeah.
You know, I splash around pre-flop, and as soon as that flop comes down, I'm not chasing backdoor anything there. I need to hit that pretty hard to continue. And I think that's the difference, because a lot of these other players are going to chase. You know, if there's one low card on the board, they're going to hold on to that low draw. And, you know, another low comes on the turn, you've got it reeled in, and then they miss on the river, and they fold. That's the profit in this game.
Yeah.
It's those kind of players. And as long as you're not that player, you know, I think you're going to do all right. And you're going to be frustrated if you play normal starting hands in that game. So, I mean, I think you can loosen up. You just got to be very disciplined on the flop.
I think we talked a little bit, too. I have a lot to learn about this game still, and maybe it's because I don't play it enough, and that probably is the reason. But when we played on the ship, there were hands on the river that I felt like I missed a bet, and I probably should have bet if I thought long and hard about it. But I feel weird thinking long and hard about bets and limit games. I always do. I don't know why. And so I just said, you know what? I always think the nuts is out there a lot of times when I'm playing these games. And so I'm thinking, okay, I've got a really big hand here, but it's not the nuts. Let me just be happy with the pot that's out there. And I check the river, and then they turn over an inferior hand, and I scoop, and I was like, I missed a bet there. So, you know, I really do have to learn more. It's an intriguing game. It's one that I'm not a real big fan of split pot games unless it's stud eight. Stud eight is a whole different animal to me than this one is.
Sure.
And but yeah, you're right. You're absolutely right. The profit is the people who hang on and who play second best hands. And that's, you know, in this case, you know, he ended up being the person there, so that was too bad.
Well, I think it's an interesting point you brought up about, you know, it seems weird to put that much thought into one bet. But that's really the essence of limit. That's what people, I don't think, understand is that it's squeezing a bet out and saving a bet. And it adds up over time. You don't have that home run ball that you have in No Limit.
Yeah.
So, I mean, the thought you have in No Limit is, oh, my gosh, if I'm wrong here, my stack is gone on this hand. So I think you naturally think that you need to think more there. But I think I can make the case that you need to think just as long and hard sometimes on these limit hands, because that's a huge thing, what you're talking about there. And I still haven't perfected that either, is because I know people know how conservative I play. I lose a lot of bets on the river, too, because I just don't want to get raised. And I make the mistake of thinking that getting raised and costing me that extra bet there is less profitable than putting that bet in when they don't have it.
Yeah. Very good. Good points.
And it comes down to just figuring out what those times are and not guessing. And that's the problem. I think your problem is your problem. And it's my problem, too, sometimes at the river is we're guessing.
Because the other thing is, like, a lot of times I'm always thinking, one of the hands I think I had was I had three kings. There was no low. And I had the ace in my hand. So I had three kings with the best kicker. And I was thinking to myself, but he has three other cards. You know what I mean? And any one of those could have paired, and you could have an inferior full house.
Yep.
Why make the bet here? And then it turns out that he didn't. He had a king queen, and I had the better three of a kind. With, you know, so I'm thinking, oh man, I should have made a bet there, or maybe I shouldn't have. I don't know. I just sometimes I feel like I miss bets, and other times I feel like I'm calling too many bets when I play this game. So you should really give it some thought, just like you would be if your whole stack was on the line in No Limit Hold'em. You know, there's no reason not to. You just play it out in your head, and then think if you need to make that value bet or not.
All right, Chris, well, we appreciate hearing from you again. It's been too long, so keep in touch with us a little more often, particularly Limit Omaha hands. But we are going to send you a T-shirt from PMS Pokerware, which sells hilarious shirts for gals and guys in the Annie Up Store at annieupstore.com. And everybody else, send us your hands of the week to magazine.com, and you too might get some great prizes.
Yeah, you fell out of there again. Podcast at AnnieUpMagazine.com. Man, only twice during the show this week, though, so give us a break. Our audio's getting better.
It's getting better.
I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Long.
We'll see you at the tables.
Annie Up is a production of AnnieUpMagazine.com and is recorded at WDAE 620 AM in Tampa. Contact us at podcast@AnnieUpMagazine.com or call our hotline at 813-448-1120. If you'd like to advertise, send us an email at advertising@AnnieUpMagazine.com or call 727-331-4335. Some music used in this episode comes courtesy of the PodSafe Music Network.